Welcome to Civil Defense Radio with your host, Preston Schleinkofer. This week we have Jonathan Kylene Jones returning to the show. So please help me welcome Jonathan and Kylene. How you guys doing?
Great. Thank you very much. Good.
Great. So for the people who haven't had a chance to listen to your other broadcast, can you just give us a very quick introduction to you guys and what you have been doing online?
Yeah. So we are the Provident Preppers, and we have both a website and a YouTube channel. And our goal is to help people get prepared in a common sense, reasonable way so that when disaster strikes, we can be ready for just about anything because we've taken the steps that we need to in advance. We've prepared both physically and mentally in common sense ways. And very much we are promoting civil defense the same way that you are, Preston. We are so excited for all the hard work that you are doing and all of the communication that is going on in helping to help people prepare.
Well, thank you.
And a couple of other things that we stand for. One is that we realize that sometimes this is overwhelming, and the key is to break it down, and we try and help you do that with action plans and to break it into small bites so that we can eat it. The other thing is we are very community-minded, and we encourage everyone to be community-minded. Together, we are much stronger than we are if we are separate.
Yes, and that's correct. That's the spirit of civil defense, which you guys are part of a national organization, correct?
Correct. We're members of the American Civil Defense Association, and this is an entity that really focuses on helping people prepare.
Yes. And speaking of preparing, we're going to be talking about preparing food supplies for all kinds of emergency situations.
Correct. And we're excited to give you some of our ideas.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. But first, I want to take us to this article that I found on your guys' website that I had missed before. I don't know how I did, but it talks about a couple reports that I'm very familiar with. I always read with a highlighter, so my documents are all highlighted up. And there's a statement in here. The title of your article on the ProvidentPrepper.com. Or is it .org?
It's .org, but .com takes you there too.
Okay. It's the new urgency to prepare for an extended power outage. And it talks about the President's National Infrastructure Advisory Council report, as well as the U.S. Air Force's 2018 Electromagnetic Defense Task Force report. And both of those reports have a lot of great information in there for people who are concerned about the future and what disasters may come about. But there's a statement in here that you quote that I'm gonna read here, and people will probably catch the reason why I read this. And it's part of the NAIC, the National Infrastructure Advisory Council's report. And it says, "The idea of individual preparedness is not a new concept. Civil defense, an older term used to elevate the level of individual preparedness and activate communities, used to be more widely accepted." And that's true. Civil defense was the system of being prepared as a nation. And on my website, there's a graphic that demonstrates that preparedness. And it starts with the individual and the family, neighborhood, and community.
Right, right. We have to start with ourselves, and then we reach out to influence everyone that we can.
And it takes all of us and our unique skills and abilities to be able to be safe and to succeed.
Yes, it really does take a community, doesn't it?
It does.
Yes. Now, so we're going to talk about preparing our pantry, so to speak, for disasters. I'm going to title this episode Food Preparation 101 or something similar to that. It's a building block, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that it's really important that we start with the foundation of exactly why we do this. And when we look at building our food stores, we need to understand exactly what the requirements are. So for instance, we are really big into the caloric requirements, and we feel like you should build your food storage around calories, which as a society we look at so negatively, but they are so important for energy and nutrition, right? We've got to have the nutritional piece in there. So we're looking at a combination of both the calories and the nutrition. There was a study called the Minnesota Starvation Experiment around World War II afterwards. Thousands of people had died from starvation. So I think it was in 1945, there were 36 healthy men that volunteered for the starvation experiment. And they mimicked the diet that people were eating, at World War II when they were starving to death. And they were trying to find solutions. But it was interesting because the diet consisted of things that they were able to find, such as potatoes, rutabagas, turnips, whole wheat bread, macaroni. It was a very high carbohydrate diet with very little protein. And these poor men really suffered. In the starvation phase of the experiment, their caloric intake was 1,570 calories a day. They were really sick. They had depression and hysteria, emotional distress. They couldn't concentrate. They couldn't comprehend. Their judgment capabilities were impaired. Things like they were always cold and they had edema or swelling in all of their extremities. Because of the lack of calories, their day-to-day life was significantly impacted. So we take the study and we look and say, okay, this is a great controlled study. We need to make sure that when we store our food, that we have the right combination of food and a high enough caloric intake that we don't end up like these men, that we are still able to be healthy and strong and function in a world where we probably are going to need a higher level of physical exertion.
Yes, it's important to plan with calories. And I notice on your action plan for food storage that you have calories listed in there. Males, 2,400 to 3,200 calories. Females, 2,000 to 2,400. Now, a lot of people who are active, they're going to say, okay, yeah, that's fair because that's what they need to stay active. But somebody who's sedentary, they're going to say, well, that's way too many, which is true because if you're just sitting around, you're not going to need as many calories as if you're active and doing things. And what a lot of people don't realize is in a disaster situation that goes on more than just a few hours, you're going to be very active, and that means there's a lot of stress involved as well, which means you need to have more calories in order to sustain yourself at your current level of activity, correct?
Absolutely. And if you happen to be in a scenario where you have a lower calorie requirement, say you're in some type of a shelter situation and you're not able to move, well, then your food storage just lasts for a longer period of time, right? So there's no downside to planning for greater calories. There's a huge problem with not planning enough calories.
Yeah, I can see that.
And then on that note, we talk about what it is that we should store. So we've got the vitamins and nutrients that you need, the vitamins and minerals. If you do not consume all of the nutrients that you need, then you've got a disease process that occurs, which puts you in a compromised situation again. But it's interesting to note that if you store wheat, rice, pasta, dried beans, oats, and milk, you have everything that you need, vitamin and mineral-wise, except vitamin A and vitamin C. Those are the two kind of wild cards in your food storage that really, that's why you have a garden. That's why it's really important to store either supplements or freeze-dried or dehydrated fruits and vegetables. John personally likes to grow a whole bunch of Swiss chard. And I'm fine with Swiss chard, but I don't like it every day, right? I just don't like it every
exactly.
day.
So what is beneficial about Swiss chard?
It is very high in vitamin A and vitamin C, and it's a superfood. But in a little 4x4 patch, you can grow enough for a family of six where you're eating it a lot because you cut and come again, right? But you can eat it fresh, you can cook it, or you can dry it. And all you have to do to dry it is just set it out on a cookie sheet, even inside, and then you can crumble it and store it so that you can have those nutrients throughout the winter. So if you're in a survival situation, yes, Swiss chard is a fantastic survival food. It drives me crazy, but it is a really good source. But gardening is huge, even if there's only a little bit that you produce. Some of our favorite, well, John's favorite crops are the beets and the carrots, because those are root crops and they can be grown all year round. In the when fall comes, we just cover our beds outside with these deep layers of mulch, and then all winter long we harvest those carrots. So we have, John, how long do our carrots stay, like March or April?
Yeah, usually into March and even into April we'll have lots of fresh carrots and beets, and they actually become sweeter over the winter. And so it's just an amazing way to have that year-round supply.
Well, that's interesting. So how much mulch do you put over top of them?
We usually try and get a foot or two of leaves. And a lot of times we'll just use black garbage bags and we'll fill them full of leaves from all of our neighbors. And we just lay those on top. That makes it real easy to go out. You just move a bag and you pull out carrots and beets. And it's really fun because the worms are all doing their thing. That just creates that little micro environment under there that allows these crops to stay fresh and actually improve. So it's pretty amazing.
Wow, that's a new one for me. I'm not a big gardener, but we've tried a few times, just that our house is situated such that we have these big tall trees that block out the sun except for certain periods of the day, and our deck just doesn't get enough sunlight to do anything except herbs.
Right. And everybody's situation is going to be just a little bit different. And all you can do is do the best you can. That's what we have to keep telling people. Yeah, you know, not everybody's circumstances are ideal for everything, but you do the best you can with what you've got and make it work. And if you have to adjust your plans because the garden doesn't work as well, then you do that.
So in your case, Preston, I would recommend that you make sure you store those supplements and store, you know, the freeze-dried or the dehydrated fruits and vegetables that will have those nutrients in it.
Yes.
Because you're not able to garden as well.
Yeah, we have fruits and vegetables in long-term storage. Now, we're going to take a break real quick, but when we come back, let's talk about how to build our storage and the things that we would probably need. Hey friends, please allow me to speak with you about something you may want to add to your regular health maintenance routine as well as your preparedness supplies. A few years ago, I came across an article in a preparedness magazine that caught my attention. My wife and I have always been health conscious, and we have taken various supplements over the years. However, this article introduced us to the world of essential oils. My wife began researching to find a reputable company with high-quality products. What she found was a company that we have been with now for about 4 years, using their products, many of them daily. The company is doTERRA, and their products are certified pure, therapeutic-grade essential oils. Essential oils come in all grades on the scale, but doTERRA oils are, in our opinion, at the top. Sure, you can go to Walmart or your local pharmacy and purchase essential oils, but not many of them are recommended for internal use. Many of our oils can be used orally, topically, and diffused for their wonderful aromatic fragrance and health benefits. Some of our favorites we use almost daily are lemon, clove, frankincense, lavender, Angar blend, peppermint, and melaleuca, also known as tea tree oil. These oils have become our go-to remedies for managing our health throughout the year. In fact, we credit our oils for our overall good health. You can too. Just visit our website at www.oils4lifetoday.com and explore the wonderful world of certified pure therapeutic grade essential oils for yourself. And we're back with Jonathan and Kylene. So before the break, I mentioned that we were going to talk about how to build this supply of food for emergencies.
Right.
So who wants to start off?
Well, I'll go ahead and kick this off. I think we've talked a little bit about some of the needs that we need to have in there and some of the foods that can do that. And we've emphasized, if you can, to grow a garden. Our goal for all of our clients and friends is a 3-month supply of everyday foods. These are the things you eat every day, shelf stable foods. And this is critical because that 3 months can get you through a lot of the things that might happen. And it's so important to kind of look at this from a perspective of buying time. If you've got the ability to subsist for 3 months on your own, you buy yourself time to figure out what's going on, if it's going to end, or what your next plan needs to be. Now, we couple this with a longer-term life-sustaining food supply. So that's going to be things like your grains and your beans and those kinds of things that will extend for a longer period of time. And so those two facets are the things that we emphasize, a 3-month supply of everyday foods and then the longer term life sustaining foods. And I think this is critical for everybody who wants that peace of mind and that stability.
So a lot of people can't go out and just buy a bunch of food all at once because of finances. But if you can, you should, but you should have a plan on what to do. So what is the process of building that supply of 3 months, which I think everybody should have a minimum of 1 month, 30
right.
days.
Absolutely.
But, you know, should build upon that and build towards a 1-year supply. You know, 1-year supply can do wonders. You know, if you have a short emergency, you've got enough to share with your neighbors and
sure.
and family that are close by, or somebody who might drop in and say, "Hey, you know, I just lost my job, and can I stay with you for a while?" You know, it just things like that. So, what is that process?
Okay, that's a great question, and you know, quite frankly, that stops a lot of people from doing things because they look at the big picture again. And they say, "I can't do that. How can I possibly do that?" Again, it's a matter of breaking it down into smaller bites. And if you can do just a little bit each week or a little bit each month, then you gradually get there. So we have to have a long-term perspective for this, that it doesn't have to be done today or tomorrow or even next month or next year. It's a process. You know, everybody's situation is a little different.
And, but you need to get started on it today.
Exactly.
And with the building your 3-month supply, there are so many different personalities. None of us eat the same diets. And so it's really important that your 3-month supply is targeted for you and your specific needs of your family. And there's a whole bunch of different ways to do that. On our website, theprovidentprepper.org, we have a post and there's a YouTube video on building your 3-month supply. And we have examples of a bunch of friends of ours and the different ways that they do it. So one of the ways that you can do it is just develop a menu plan. So these are what I eat for breakfast and for dinner for 2 weeks. And you write those menus down and you look at all the ingredients that you need, and then you calculate that out for 3 months. And that's kind of your par list and for your grocery shopping. And when something goes on sale, you buy whatever that amount is. So, for instance, ketchup goes on sale. And I know that in 3 months, my family is going to use 4 bottles of ketchup. But if I'm planning for a year, then I'm going to get the case of ketchup or whatever it is that my par level is for my family. And you slowly can build your supply like that. But by doing the recipes, then you've got the ingredients for the meals that your family loves. I have a friend who likes to put all of the ingredients for her family for the meals for that week in a box. And she has
idea.
12 boxes. And she pulls out the box and all the ingredients are in there and they eat the food that's out of the box. She does that so that nobody pilfers from it, right?
That's good.
Yeah, and if you don't want to put all your recipe plans down, you can do things like, okay, for 90 days, I need 90 entrees. So I'm going to do 15 boxes of hamburger helper and 15 jars of spaghetti sauce and bags of pasta. And you calculate out just these simple entrees and say, okay, for breakfast, we only eat cold cereal anyway. I need this many boxes of cold cereal to see us through 3 months. There are just so many different approaches that people can take to accomplish this that fits into their unique lifestyle, that there's no reason not to do it. And just as John was saying, slow progress is great. A lot of us can't go to Costco and just, you know, spend everything that we need to be able to have food for 3 months. If you can, that's great. Get it done. Get it on your shelves.
Yes. No, that's great. Now, when I first started looking at being prepared and getting ready for emergencies that I saw, I learned about your pantry, your wet storage, freeze-dried, the long-term, they have dehydrated and then freeze-dried. Freeze-dried lasts longer, up to 25 years, and dehydrated lasts, you know, 5 to 10, maybe 15.
Well, it depends on how it's packaged. So we have, like, I prefer dehydrated onions and carrots over freeze-dried. And those actually have a 25 to 30 year shelf life, but they have been commercially packaged. If I'm dehydrating something here at home, you're right, I have a shorter shelf life and I wouldn't extend it that long. But we have onions that, 15, 20 years old, because I rotate through my food storage. I use it a lot. They are perfect and they still have a really long shelf life. Freeze-dried is an amazing process. The problem with freeze-dried is that it takes up so much more room in that can. I need 3 cans of onion, freeze-dried onions, to take the place of 1 can, number 10 can, of dehydrated onions, because the dehydration process shrinks it. So
that's a big difference.
Yes. So yes, you're right in the respect if I'm doing this at home, but really dehydrated foods have a really long shelf life also. So I'm not sure if a freeze-dried manufacturer is putting out that information, but and then you've got your grains. You want to store those grains that are 10% moisture or less, but those will last for at least 25 to 30 years. We have wheat that we've used that's over 30 years old and been great, but we've also had dry beans that were only 10 years old that were not okay because of the way that they were stored. How you store your food storage is huge. But not everybody has a cool, dry basement to store it in. So like John was saying earlier, you have to do the best with what you can. If you take in number 10 cans, if you store, I think, John, underneath the twin size bed, it's 12 cases, right? That it holds,
correct,
72 cans. But that space underneath, if you store things like wheat and beans and rice in the number 10 cans under a twin size bed, you have starvation insurance for whoever sleeps on that bed from the time you put that toddler in that bed until well after they've graduated from college. So even if it's not in a cool, dry basement, if you can just put it underneath their bed, then you never have to clean out under their bed either, right? There's no toys or dirty clothes or anything under there. But it is a great way to have that starvation insurance to make sure that no matter what happens, you've at least got the basics. If you don't want to store wheat, don't store wheat. You don't get to have my fabulous bread. You can subsist on the beans and the rice and the oats and the pasta. And all of those have that really long shelf life.
And Kylene makes a really good point there. This needs to be a plan for each individual and each family. Sometimes there's a list out there and people think, well, this is on the list. I've got to get it. No, design it around important principles, but design it around what you want and what you need and what will work for your family. Every situation's a little different, so design it for you.
I hate lima beans. I hate lima beans. And John loves
Me
them.
Too.
So we have just a couple cans in our storage, and that's it, because I don't want to get in a situation where, you know, everybody says, oh, you'll be really glad you had it. I'm never going to be glad I have lima beans. If I store pinto beans instead, I'll be glad I have those. So, yeah, your family preferences are huge.
Yeah, I put lima beans in the same category as liver.
Yes.
I'll never eat it again.
Exactly.
Never.
Oh, don't say that, because then you'll have to and it'll be awful.
It will be awful if I have to stoop that low to eat that.
I know. And
it's going to be, it's going to really be a bad situation.
That's what I think. And John's thinking, oh, that would be such a good day. I love lima beans.
Yeah. I'll eat those and you guys can have the other.
Yeah.
But you do have to rotate your regular wet storage. That's like the canned fruits and vegetables and stuff like that that has expiration dates on them.
Absolutely.
Spaghetti sauces, things like that.
And it's interesting to note that the charitable food banks, when you go donate something at a food bank, they will take canned foods that are non-acidic, so not tomatoes, but they will take any canned foods that are non-acidic for 5 years past shelf date.
Really?
Yes.
That's a good indicator that it's still good on your shelf.
It is, and we hear that so often. Oh, it's past the expiration date. I have to throw it away. No, 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 no. really, it's looking at that. Is the seal on the can still good? Is it leaking anything? When you open it, does it smell right? Does it taste right? If there's anything that is off color or offensive, throw it away immediately. Don't even mess with it. But we had peaches where we have a whole pile of children. And so when peaches went on sale this one time, I bought like 10 cases of them. And because we much prefer our home bottled peaches, they sat for a long time. But it was interesting to watch the process, because when you first ate them out of the can, when they were fresh, they were very firm. Over time, the taste of the peaches never changed. But 10 years later, the peaches were kind of more mushy, and they were a better candidate to put in a smoothie or something like that than to just eat out of the can. But they were still good. I'm trying to remember the steamship Bertrand. Is that right, John? Is that the right name?
Right, yes.
So that was a really good study that was done, because this boat had sunk in the Missouri River, and they were able to take the canned foods that were recovered and evaluate them. And the things that they found were that the mineral content didn't change. And even after all that time, the flavor and the color weren't like fresh anymore, but they were still safe to eat.
Hmm. And how long were they underwater?
It was 1865, wasn't it, John?
Yes, and I didn't even know they put food in cans in 1865. But yes, it was back in the 1800s, and then they pulled that up sometime in the 1950s. I don't remember the date, but it was a substantial...
Oh, 1968.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So very interesting study.
But there were no levels of vitamin C left.
So those sea rat cans are still edible.
They're still edible, but your vitamins degrade over time. Your minerals do not.
Right.
So you could get the calories, but you're not going to get the nutrition. And we do not advocate planning to eat your old food storage, but it's important to know what is good and safe to eat in case you have a situation where you need to do that. We personally have a storage room downstairs, and then we have a large pantry upstairs. And one of the ways that we rotate our food is when something comes from the store, it goes into the downstairs storage room. So all of the fresh cans are down there. When we need something, we stock our upstairs pantry from our downstairs storage room. And that really helps us to rotate things. And as we have done this over the years, we have learned what our family eats, what we should buy, and what we shouldn't. There was one time when I bought several cases of canned salmon. I'd never had canned salmon before, and I thought, oh, this will be great. And I was imagining it like canned tuna. But when you open canned salmon, it has the bones and the skin. And I could not bring myself to eat that. And so it sat down there for a long time and ended up being food for the animals. Now, Jonathan won't agree with me on this, because he would have totally eaten it. I am much more picky eater than he is. But I'm not going to buy canned salmon in the future. I'll just make sure that I'm buying my canned chicken or my canned beef or things that we really eat. Now, which, by the way, while we're talking about canned meats, canned tuna and canned fish has a short shelf life. It will start to taste bad very quickly. But we still have some cans of chicken that we're eating right now in our 90-day challenge that are from 2008.
Wow, that's a good long time.
It's a good long time. Now, they've been stored appropriately, right, in the basement, cool, dry, dark,
mm-hmm.
and with a constant temperature. But they are still very much edible, and we're eating it in our everyday life.
Hmm.
You could never store tuna that long.
We love our canned salmon, and it doesn't have bones or skin. We're getting it at Costco right now, but sometimes they run out and we got to get it somewhere else. It's a tube. I think there's 5 or 6 cans in the tube, and we make salmon salad out of it, you know, just like tuna salad or chicken salad, and spread it on bread or put on our leafy salads. It's really good.
Interesting. Okay, I would try that without the skin and the bones in it. So that's really good to know. I have not bought it again because of that. So we'll have to try that. When our challenge is over and we're able to shop again, we'll have to go pick some up from Costco and try it out.
Okay.
We'll check that out.
All right.
One of the other things I think it's really important to mention about food storage is that the storage containers matter a lot. If you store something in a number 10 can, that is the perfect environment, right? You're going to get the longest shelf life where your food is fresh and preserved for the longest period of time in a number 10 can. So plastic buckets, they are great in a lot of ways, but when you store something in a plastic bucket, you're going to have a long shelf life, but it is not going to be the same as a number 10 can. We have experienced that in our own food storage. The Mylar pouches or the foil pouches,
right?
That's fantastic. If you store the foil pouches inside of the plastic buckets, then you have a lot longer shelf life.
Okay.
But the problem with foil pouches is that rodents eat through them very quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to be careful of rodents.
And it's very easy to puncture them.
Yeah.
And they don't really stack well. And we've tried different things like putting them in cardboard boxes to store them. But the number 10 cans are just the ideal way to store it. We've also stored grains in peat plastic bottles, like your 7-Up bottles.
Right.
We'll clean it up really well, and then we put the beans or the rice or the wheat in them. And we've had great success, but you're still not getting the same shelf life as you are with a number 10 can. So if somebody is going to buy food storage and their intent is not to rotate it, just to put it under that bed or just to tuck it away somewhere so if disaster strikes, they have it, number 10 cans really are the way to go.
All right. Well, we're coming up on the end of our time. So can you give us the website again? And highly recommend going to the action plan page on their website. So if you can talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, it's theprovidentprepper.org. And there are categories on the menu on the right-hand side. So it's just a little drop-down menu. If you click on food storage, you will find so many different articles about how to build your food storage, how to start. On that same menu, there are action plans. And those are so helpful in being able to just print off that PDF and say, okay, this is my starting point. This is what I need to do. And then you build your own plan from there. So we spent so many hours building this to bless the lives of others. So we would love for you to go there and look at that and use it as a resource. The other thing is check out our YouTube channel, because many of the posts that we have created, we have YouTube videos on. And the reason we've done that is because so many people are busy. They might be able to have time to put on a YouTube video while they do the dishes or while they're driving or something and listen only, because you wouldn't watch. But they can have time to do that where they couldn't fit the time in their life to be able to read an article. So we're trying to put that resource out there so that it's kind of like your podcast. What a great way. I was listening to your podcast the other day when I was driving. What a great way to get that information in a way that's not using extra time in our busy life.
Yes, it's utilizing the time that we would otherwise be listening to something less beneficial.
Yeah.
I'm listening to YouTube videos and podcasts whenever I'm driving around, which I do a lot of driving in my current job, but I'm always listening to something. Jonathan, did you have any final words there?
My final words are just words of encouragement. We can do this. We can all do this. Just take it a step at a time and work steadily, and great things happen. And it's the peace of mind that we're seeking as much as anything. I mean, these things are very important for our future, but there's a lot to be said for just having that peace of mind of knowing, you know what, I'm taking care of my family, I'm doing what I can, and that peace of mind is so valuable. And so I just strongly urge all of us, be on that path, taking small, steady steps.
Well, thank you. Thank you for being on the show today. And
thank you for having us.
Civil defense equals resiliency equals survival. The top-down governmental approach to solve our community resiliency problem has failed us. We need a community-based grassroots approach to solve this problem. To be resilient, it takes preparation, organization, and training to meet the needs of whatever situation we may find ourselves in. Civil defense helps reduce panic in a disaster, and this is why we strongly recommend establishing a community-based civil defense organization in your city or county in partnership with your local emergency manager and community leaders. Let's start a conversation with the guide found on our resources page of our website at civildefenseradio.com. Be sure to check out our regular postings on Facebook at Civil Defense Radio and on Twitter at civil_def_radio. where we post information about the many threats we see to our safety and security as a nation. We wish to thank Jonathan and Kylene Jones again, and thank you, our friends and listeners. I really appreciate you being on the show this week, so please be safe, be informed, be prepared, and may God bless you and keep you until next time.